You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name's Pat Davila. Joining me is my co-host, Dan Fry. Dan, how the heck are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, Pat. Happy New Year.
Happy
it's been
New
a while.
Year.
We keep saying we're going to get this thing going on a regular basis here, and we still end up not.
Yeah, it's tough, man. The holidays are always hard. We wanted to get an episode out before Christmas, but it just didn't happen. But anyway,
no, it was too much was going on.
Yeah, it's tough around the holidays, you know. But also joining us tonight, we got the Gadget Guru from the Andrew Buffet podcast. Guru, welcome to the show.
Okay, do I get to introduce the show the way that I do when I go on my show, or do
sure.
I have to do it your way?
Go for it, man.
Go right ahead. Go for it. Here we go.
I kind of like this song. It's kind of like a
well, you know.
What is that considered? Like
no,
old
do.
Jazz?
I like when you play the whole thing out too. The guy singing and stuff like that, not just the music intro going in.
I'll have to cue it up for tomorrow night when I record live.
Sweet. Thanks.
I just have the intro here along with those sound effects that keep messing things up. Let's see, angry crowd.
What, you use Windows Media Center? To hell with you.
Actually, this is my my original Motorola Droid doing all this. It's sitting here hooked up to the board, acting as a soundboard.
That's cool.
That's nice.
You do a great show, by the way. I really enjoy Andrew Buffet. It's
me too. The only Android show that I listen to anymore.
I listen to two Android-related podcasts. I listen to also Android Central. And the Android Central podcast is very hardware-specific. They're so into the hardware, those guys. And they really don't talk about software that much, which is nice because you guys mostly talk about the software. And I
well,
like
everybody
that.
Has different hardware.
Exactly. And who the hell can afford to get test new phones out every other week? So unless you're unless you're like a magazine or you've been more established, you're not going to get phones from all these different providers. So, and, you talk about the software. It's nice. I like it. It's good. Highly recommend
it. And I keep buying hardware, mostly to my financial detriment. I have the Nook Color sitting here somewhere. I have the original Droid, the Droid 3, which I replaced it with after the volume button broke. The Transformer, which I just heard is getting ice cream sandwich. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
And it works good everywhere. Guru and I, we were doing Google Talk over while he was on his vacation over in Italy. So and he was able to hop onto a I guess it was a global plan, right, for Verizon, and then just popped right on. We were able to chat. So.
No, I couldn't afford the Verizon global plan. I got them to unlock the Droid 3, which has a SIM card slot in it, and I put in a Vodafone Italian SIM card, and then I actually spent time in a Vodafone store in Florence trying to get them to fix it after the person in the Roman Vodafone store messed up the prepaid thing and actually used up all my money on a day plan instead of on a monthly.
Oh, no.
I actually
why did you mention that on the podcast? Come on now.
Seriously, we didn't hear about this.
Oh, I didn't mention that. Well, let's see. I went into a Vodafone shop in Rome, and I had them set up a 3-gigabyte plan, which was €19 plus €10 for the card, so it ended up being about €30.
It's not too bad.
All in. That's actually very good for 3 gigabytes, and I had Groove IP, which is a Google Voice client, which allows you to receive calls directly to the phone running, so people could actually ring my Google Voice number in Italy. And
oh, cool.
I did this, my grandmother worried about me, so she could call a number in New York, and it would ring in Italy no matter where I was, and I was making random phone calls to people I called work just to annoy them.
Just because you could, you know? Yeah.
Well, I normally work Sundays, so I called the guy who was filling in for me on Sunday, and he said, well, you must be very bored in Italy if you're doing this.
He's right. But that's cool that you could do that. You know, that's a really geeky thing to do. And the fact that you could it, you know, you had to do it.
Yeah, and I got a kick out of it. I just started calling random people and leaving voicemails whenever it was slow somewhere or I was waiting for something. People feel very guilty when they don't answer the phone and they realize you were calling from Italy. They feel a little better when they realize it didn't really cost you very much. But I was on Google Talk, and I probably could have done video. And it was actually worked out very nicely. If I go to another foreign country, I may try that again.
Yeah, most of Western Europe is pretty easy with that sort of thing. You know, it seems like the cell providers over there, it's a little easier to deal with. You know, there's no lockdown, there's no contracts, and the rates seem to be a little cheaper. You can get, you know, cards and SIMs and basic plans for, you know, pretty affordable rates.
Well, I was thrilled. You know, I did my research and I went into the store and told them what I wanted. They said, oh, people don't get that for phones. They get that for tablets.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting when you know more about the special plans that an Italian cell phone provider has than an Italian cell phone provider representative.
Well, it's a new year. We got lots of myth stuff to get into. I had a hardware meltdown. Now, the last build of the myth that I did wasn't that long ago. It was maybe 7-8 months ago. Not even, I don't think. So I started.
Yeah, it was. I think we all rebuilt right around the time the Prime came out. So,
right. A little before
so that. That August or July or August, something like that. Yeah, I know I was in August. You might have been about a month before
I was early. It was still June when I did my build. But
well, I rebuild every time a new version of Fedora comes out.
Oh, you're still doing Fedora?
Well, with old habits.
Yeah, Mythdora, I think they stopped developing that, but you don't do that, right? You just do a regular install, right?
Yeah, because I also run the thing as a server. So one of the reasons I wanted to go to 16 is systemd, which has a lot of advantages, at least on the administration side.
Right. Well, I was getting some symptoms, and let me describe some of the symptoms I was getting. I would start to get the first thing I noticed was my Mythfill database. It was saying that I didn't have any guide data, even though I had a full 2 weeks guide information. Then I noticed I tried to log into MythWeb, and I was getting PHP crashes, the scripts were bombing. So when I went to certain pages, it was bombed out. So I did a little Googling around, and I saw something similar to that. And people said to check your tables. So I went through MythWeb. There's an interface to check your database tables, MySQL databases. And I went in there to look at the tables, and sure enough, there were some tables that were listed as being crashed. Now, there's a utility in there where you can go in and repair the tables and also optimize the tables. And I tried doing that, and you know, I did the fixes several times. It seemed to get rid of the errors. I was booting up. I wasn't getting the errors anymore. The only thing that I noticed was that in one of the tables, it was saying that the checksum was out of balance or something like that was the message. And then I started getting some other issues. Some of the issues I was getting was on my remote front end, during playback, I was starting to get video tearing and pixelization. Okay, so that was a very odd thing that was happening. I was even getting random freezes. Okay, and also when I was recording, another issue that was showing up was that I was only getting about 20 minutes of recordings in, and the thing would just completely freeze. The system would completely freeze. So I thought it might have been the hard drive. I did some disk scans on the drive, and it wasn't showing any errors whatsoever.
Was this the front-end drive or the back-end drive?
This is on the back-end. The front-end, okay. The only thing noticeable on the front-end was on playback. I was getting the tearing and the pixelization. But the problems were...
I'm just asking, because you said, I think I remember you have a NAS running your...
No. I don't run any myth related stuff on the NAS. The only thing that's on the NAS is my stored external media. So stuff like archived videos, music, and photos are on the NAS.
You don't have the recordings on there.
No, the only thing that's really on my backend system are the recordings. Everything else is on the NAS, and what I do is I have an NFS share. that I did share with. And then I add that stuff. I create a folder and I do an NF share. And my folders, my music, and my archived videos are up on the NAS. But my recordings are on the MythBox. So the NAS is, you know, just storing old stuff. Anyway, so like I said, the recordings, I would only get about 20 minutes in. And it was driving me crazy. I was it was really bad. It was really, really bad. And I was getting lockups. So I tried upgrading the system to the latest version. I'm running Mythbuntu, and I was running 11.4. So I upgraded the system to 11.10. The upgrade went okay as far as I could tell from a system standpoint. The only issues with the upgrade was the latest Mythbuntu, they have the login manager. They switched to LightDM. And what happened was you would the system would come up and you would get a black screen, nothing. You could still get into the other virtual terminals. You know, you could do an SSH in and you'd get a prompt and it would work. And I looked around the Ubuntu and Mythbuntu forms. And sure enough, you had to make some changes to the LightDM configuration file. For whatever reason, the Mythbuntu people, they didn't code the change to the configuration of the file during the upgrade. So I had to do that manually. I did that manually, and the system came up fine. X was fine, and I could see it and everything worked okay. For some reason, automatically logging into the starting up the Myth front end was turned off. So I had to go into the setup and turn that back on so every time the system came up, the front end would start up. And another thing I noticed was that my remote wasn't working anymore. So I went into the remote through the Mythbuntu control center. They have an application in there where all the services you can, checkbox on and off, stuff like SSH or VNC. You can also, turn on and turn off, say, the NVIDIA proprietary driver install through there, any MP3 codecs enabling or any other proprietary codecs, you can, have that stuff installed through there for people not familiar with the Mythbuntu Control Center application. So, I just turned the LIRC on and off. I reconfigured it, and it was working again. Now, that didn't alleviate the problems. I was still getting random table crashes on the MySQL database. So I'm thinking it's a hard drive issue. So I swap in a hard drive, a different drive in there, and I try doing a clean install in there. And when I do the install, the thing just completely locks at the same point every single time. So I'm thinking, is this a problem with the Mythbuntu installer that they've changed something in this release? And it's, not compatible with my hardware for whatever reason. Because I did a clean install, for 11.04, not that long ago, and it worked without a hitch. So I also tried swapping out the DVD drive that I had in there, putting the meter in there to the install, and same issue. Locks and freezes at the same exact time. Now, the other option I tried was to try installing Linhess, which is based on Arch. It's an Arch install base, and he's got it configured very nice. He recently had a new version release back in, I think, September, October. So it's pretty up to date. So, I downloaded that, and I burned the disk, and tried doing the install. And the same exact kind of thing. The installer started going, and at a certain point, the system would just stop working, freeze. So at this point, I tried swapping out RAM, and same thing, no problems. I even did some tests on my RAM, the sticks of RAM that are in there. No errors whatsoever. So the only other variable that I can think of at this time, that it's my motherboard. Either the bus on the motherboard is completely hosed, or there's something else on the motherboard too. So what I'm doing now is I ordered a new motherboard. In fact, I went and ordered the one that we have listed on our Amazon store that you put near Dan. I think it's a gigabit motherboard, which you have on your backend system.
Which one is it? I'm using a gigabyte for my backend board.
If you're on your machine right there, you can go to the mythtvcast.com/store. And I have it listed there in the store.
Okay, well, this computer has a browser. This actually, the computer that's running the recording actually used to be my Myth TV backend before I upgraded it. I just bought an extra case. And well, I was using an Atom processor to run the show, and that didn't work very well consistently.
Okay, it's a Gigabit GA-M68MT-S2P for an AM3-based AMD processor, a Phenom 2. So I'm just waiting for the new motherboard to come, and I'm going to reinstall everything from scratch. I also took the opportunity to also get a Blu-ray drive. If they've come down in price, the Blu-ray drive, so I figured, what the hell.
And I put one in.
I put one in about a year. I guess it was about not this past December, the December before that I put one in, and since I've been able to use things like Make MKV to do like Blu-ray ripping and stuff like that, so I can actually, you know, produce streams for on, you know, watching on my Myth TV.
So you've done some Blu-ray rips then with Make MKV.
Yep, and it works great. It's fast. I mean, the Blu-ray drives are fast, and Make MKV is really, really fast, and it produces, you know, great quality, you know, extractions from the Blu-ray, maintains navigation, subtitles if you want it, different audio tracks if you want it, you know, stuff like that. All available as well with, you know, right on the remote control as you're watching the video. If you want to silence a track or you know, switch to a, you know, Spanish or French or whatever that may be. Even do the chapter navigation with the jumping between chapters and stuff like that. It's not the same as what you would see like on the actual Blu-ray or DVD itself, but it allows you to just bring up a list of them, and it shows you like a time, roughly how far into the stream it is, and takes you right down to there. So it works really, really well.
Yeah. So, you know, it was really frustrating doing all this. You know, when hardware goes, it's tough to diagnose and pinpoint sometimes. You know, you got to swap in parts in and out and whatnot. It's really tough. Like, I even pulled out the video card to see if it was the video card maybe was affecting it. And I would have the same exact issue every single spot. So it's definitely the motherboard. And what's really disappointing is the motherboard is not really that old. I have an Asus in there, an Asus motherboard, and it's not even a year old. So I'm going to swap out the motherboard. I'm going to contact Asus and see if they can send me a replacement board, because it hasn't even been a year yet.
Could you have had any power surges or anything like that lately that may have done something?
Well, I do have an APS. I hook all my AV equipment through an APS. So I don't think that would affect it.
Right.
If there was a brownout or a surge, the APS would pretty much shield my equipment from that.
Well, I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Well, I wanted to see, you know, I wish I'd had you guys yesterday when I was particularly frustrated, because I want to see if you can tell me what my problem might be.
Shoot.
Because I still haven't figured it out. So yesterday I went and shut down my back end for its monthly dirt cleaning. I shut it down. I blow out all the filters because I put a bunch of different filters on there in order to try to keep the dust out of the inside. And so I turned it off, and then when I attempted to boot it, the system did not want to boot.
You know what that could be? I've noticed sometimes when I have a system, and if I'm playing around with it, and I turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off a couple times, sometimes there's I don't know if it's a fuse that blows or there's some kind of overheating that might happen from that, but sometimes the system won't turn on. So what I have to do is I have to unplug the thing, flip the switch in the back where the power supply is. You know, the power supply has an on-off switch in the back sometimes. They usually do, the newer ones. Flip that off and just let it sit for a few minutes and then plug the power back in and then flip the switch back on. And that'll usually bring it back for me. But I don't know if your issue is the same thing that I've seen like that.
Well, I'm going to go a step further. Similar. I slowly and systematically took every single piece of hardware off of the motherboard.
I've been there. I've been down that road. I know what you're talking about.
And it still wasn't posting. In fact, all it would do, there was a USB keyboard hooked up, and all it would do would be to blink the scroll lock light.
The only thing I can think of, dude, that happened is that your power supply went.
Well, no, it gets better. So I pulled out my power supply tester. And it said that my, I think it was my plus 5 or my minus 5 volt wasn't working, and lit up the little red indicator indicating that my power supply was failing. So I went to the store, which was fortunately open till 9. I picked up a new power supply, installed it, and it was still not quite working. So I hooked the new power supply up to the same power supply tester, and it gave me the same result. So what I have is a faulty power supply tester. I decided to keep the power supply, though. You know, it was a nice one, modular, so I could actually take off some of the cabling. So I decided, yeah, I think
That's one that I have listed in there as well. It's modular in the store.
Let's see, which one do you have here? Let's see, there's I see a Seasonic one.
Yeah.
This was a Thermaltake.
Yeah, okay. I've had Thermaltakes. Sewell's popular too.
Well, I had to get what was available at a store at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, you know, you're lucky that you even have a store that has computer hardware that you could buy. It seems...
Yeah, we got nothing.
It's really tough these days, especially around here.
Yeah, this is Micro Center. There are about 2 in New York. There used to be only 1. So there happens to be 1 on Long Island. It's actually a fairly good store, and I continue to patronize them for that reason, because I want them to be around.
Yeah, it's tough. We don't have them over here yet. I don't think there's any New Jersey.
Well, no, there's one. There's one, I believe, King of Prussia,
right,
or
King
something
Prussia,
like that.
Right.
But other than that, I'm not aware of it. Actually, I thought that one in King of Prussia might have closed, but I'm not entirely certain.
And that's
well,
far from
ever,
here. That's a good 45 minutes.
If you ever stop by, I'll take you to the local Micro Center.
We'll have to do that.
Yeah, but so I came back and I installed it, and then I started removing components again. So I dismantled the entire system, put the motherboard back in. So my then it started to work.
Okay.
There's one more twist here. Then I tried to plug in, the system normally runs headless. I tried to plug in a monitor, and then it wouldn't work anymore.
Huh. Now, are you using onboard video? That's what's on there?
Well, yeah, because I never have a monitor plugged into it. So
right.
I figured, why bother with a card? But my operating theory is that there's some sort of electrical short. So when I removed the board and reseated it, I somehow cleared that. But then when I plugged in a DVI cable, the system stopped working again. So when I switched to a VGA monitor, it posted and I had it back up. But there's still a problem there that I can't sort out.
Yeah, there's definitely a short or something like that that's occurring in there.
Yeah. Motherboards are really tough. They're really tough motherboards. You know, the motherboard has all these integrated things on there, you know, the buses and whatnot, you know, the connection to the memory. It's really tough. You know, when a motherboard goes, there's not a lot you can do with it, you know, and it's hard to pinpoint it where exactly the issue is, unless you're, you know, like you're an electrical engineer and you know what you're doing and have some kind of a voltage meter where you can, you know, touch it in different spots, you know, for the different circuits. It's really tough to find out where exactly the problem lies.
I know, which is why I probably won't open it up again for a while. Though while I was in there, I discovered I think I need to replace the CPU cooler at some point. But that's one of my least favorite jobs.
So the theme.
I lucked out actually the last time that I had a catastrophic hardware issue like that, and it was probably about August of 2008. Now that I think about it. And I just came home, and the thing just nothing, no power whatsoever would get to it. You know, the hard drive fan would spin. I'm sorry, the power supply fan would spin briefly, and then the whole thing would just shut down. So I just knew that, you know, at that point something, you know, the whole hardware, the motherboard most likely had to go, and you know, the power supply seemed to have issues as well at the time because it was aging at that time. And so that's when I pretty much just swapped almost everything out of there, new power supply, new hard drive, new hard drives, new motherboard, new RAM, new processor, everything. And so far that's been the same system roughly that I've been using. I've replaced things here and there, like, you know, added like solid state drives and, you know, stuff like that, you know, different video cards. But so far it's been running along pretty well. And again, I'm going to knock on wood there for
Well, I'm just nervous.
Now that you guys are talking about this, right, something's bound to happen.
Yeah, I thought at the very first, I thought it was the hard drive because that seems to fail the most. But you know, I had the system running on a solid state drive, and this was really, you know, I haven't done a lot with solid states. My front end has a solid state drive. You know, that's about it, my experience with it. So, you know, I ran some tests on it, and it wasn't coming back with any, you know, there weren't any errors or anything as far as I could tell. Also, my regular drive, you know, I have a 1 terabyte drive where the recordings are stored on, and they both came back clean, all the tests I ran against it. So, you know, like I said, it's just the process.
Well, there were some issues with the with certain solid state drives, but I believe that these are going to be newer than what we both have in our. You have a Vertex OCZ2, right?
Yeah.
Or an OCZ Vertex 2. Yeah, that's I think that's what I have in there in mine as well. And I think it was something with
the OS on mine as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. The and that's I think I think it was the Vertex 3s were having issues, and also there was a bug in some of the Intel controllers for the Intel SSDs not too long ago that they had to it was like wiping everything. I mean, it was a pretty wicked bug that they had. It was wiping everything off these people's solid state drives. And they issued a firmware update for it, but there's still, you know, all the data that was lost for all these drives that were out there.
Yep. Hardware's
fine. I only use them as solid state. I use them for the OS drive only, and I always have a second drive in there that stores the data.
That seems to be the way people are doing the setups.
Yeah, they'll get
now.
Better. They'll get better.
Yeah, they'll get better, yep. I'm sure.
My boots so fast. I mean, my front end up in the sunroom there, that thing is up and you know, after it initially posts, you know, it is connected to the back end in like 5 seconds. Yeah. And I'm not kidding.
Yeah, that's
the master back end, it just takes a slight bit longer to boot up because I guess it's just making all the connections to the you know, to the prime, the Silicon Dust HD Home on Prime and the Hoppog PBR 1212. But it, you know, we're still talking like 10 seconds, you know, I mean, it's not bad at all.
Is it my cue now to cry about the, HD Home Run Prime, or should I wait for it later in the show?
Well, let's talk about that. Now, Gadget Guru, you live in New York, right? You're where are you, in Queens somewhere?
In Queens.
So you have Time Warner, right? That's who your cable provider is?
Yes, and I do have an alternative to Time Warner. It's called Nothing.
Over the air.
And, well, I do have over the air as well. I hooked into the old broadcast antenna on the roof, and I do get a few stations on there. And I don't know about you, but you know, just even going with traditional broadcast stations, I was looking at my lineup this time of year, knowing a lot of the cable shows are on hiatus.
Right.
And there are actually very few things on cable I'm watching right now, because a lot of things, you know, I think there are 3 or 4 channels that I occasionally watch programming on, and a lot of those shows, I watch a lot of USA programming during their seasons. All those shows are pretty much on hiatus.
Right, right. Also, you know, shows like Breaking Bad and some of the other shows that I watch, they're all in between. They're all done. So, right now, I got some network stuff that I watched. You know, the wife watches too. And stuff like, you know, Anthony Bourdain I watch. You know, stuff like that is still going. You know, the Pawn Shop guys.
I was just thinking about Time Warner just put out this email to me telling me how I should be pleased that they are holding firm and not allowing MSG to increase the rates. And that's why MSG is off the air in New York.
Yeah, I heard about that. So if you're into any MSG-related programs, such as, I guess, what, the Rangers, I know the Major League Soccer, the Red Bulls, they're on MSG in New York. What else is on there? The Knicks? Who else?
I'm not sure. The problem is I'm not a sports person.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
You know, they're telling me that they're holding firm, and you know, I'm voting for them to hold firm because I have to pay for MSG whether I want it or not.
Yeah.
But they were nice, though. They told me that I could get a free sports package for the next few months while they negotiate this. I asked them if I could just have the money. They're not paying MSG back, but they didn't take that seriously.
Yeah. It's tough when these you know, these entities get into spats. And who suffers over this? You know, the consumers.
Well, what I would really like to do, and it's one thing that I wish Myth TV really had, is to give me some interesting statistics about how much I would watch programs on certain channels. I know it has a little, but I would be really curious for it to spend some time analyzing what programs I watch, how often I watch them, and what networks they're normally on. That would actually be very interesting data for me to look at.
So you're talking about statistics, basically. If you're a real statistics type person, you're
into
that.
Well, I'm thinking of it more in the fact that I could certainly use that if I wanted to, let's say, change my cable service. For example, a few times I've thought about Time Warner only offers two tiers, the quote-unquote value tier and the starter tier. So if I wanted to go down to the lower tier, would that be a good idea for me? Now, I just agreed to give them $10 more to get wideband, and that took they were supposed to show up on Wednesday. They showed up on Friday. So it only took me 2 days of waiting to actually have the cable people. But the franchise agreement in New York says that if they fail to show up, they owe me a free month of service. So I made $130 off of
nice. That.
There you go.
At least it wasn't a total bust.
There was a $40 fee for them to show up and install a DOCSIS 3 modem, which they will not let me pick up at their local service center. So that was $40, which they had to waive, and they had to give me a free month of service. So that's another $100. So
nice. Now, the big thing with Time Warner is with their cable cards, they have flags on there of copy, I think copy once only.
Yeah, so no copy freely content, not even on basic cable.
Right, so the only way to do your own DVR system would be if you're using Microsoft Media Center, pretty much. That's about it.
You mean the product that's being discontinued?
Oh, is it?
Well, as Dan would know, I tried to put you two in contact with Ben Draba, who works for Engadget, who was a little upset about that in the market for a new DVR software, and I was trying to assist in him coming over to Myth TV.
Wow, so they're dead-ending that, basically.
Apparently it's going to be a niche product. I think it has to do with the fact that Xbox Live is going to be getting television.
Interesting. So they push an Xbox as a TV DVR system.
Yeah, we've had a pretty lengthy Twitter conversation going, over different features and stuff like that. When was that, about a week or so ago?
Yes, and I thought of you guys immediately, as you are the audio flag bearers for Myth TV.
So back with Time
Warner. So is Time Warner, is this just in your area where you happen to live that Time Warner's like this, or is this like this
everywhere?
Everywhere, because it is everywhere.
I hear that Time Warner, there's one or two markets that they have where they don't have the flag set up like that. And they're in the process of changing it so that they are all the same, pretty much. So, you're up the boat if you're running anything with a cable card.
What,
you want to do cable
what
card.
Does that buy them? What does that actually buy them? How do they benefit from that? I don't quite get that.
Well,
it disables
the TiVo. It disables a lot of things. So.
Well, that's what I mean. Like when Pat and I both have the same cable provider, and within the last year, they decided to start switching their DVR boxes over to TiVo branded cable boxes, and they have TiVo functionality and whatnot. So does that they would never be able to offer anything like that, correct? The DVR that they offer, or do they even offer a DVR? I don't know, but they would never be able to offer. Oh, they do? Okay. But they would never be able to offer some type of a TiVo-branded DVR, or you just can't get a TiVo or anything like that right now, correct?
Well, pretty much. You wouldn't be able to do that because they mark everything, which means that the TiVo would have problems as well. Now, is the TiVo more compliant than, let's say, Myth TV?
Yeah, it is.
To a degree, but it still means that everything's locked down.
Yeah, right. What company manufactures those set-top boxes?
I think they use Motorola, don't they?
They use Motorola. They also use what's now Cisco. It used to be Scientific Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, I didn't hear that they purchased them.
But Cisco purchased? Yeah, they did. I have three boxes. They're all either Scientific Atlanta pre-merger, or one is now a Cisco that had to be swapped out. But beyond that, only one of them's hooked up to Myth TV. The other one are being used by other people here, but who won't get involved in Myth TV. But that's a whole other discussion.
Right.
Well, soon they will have Google TV, you know, boxes coming then down then, and I wonder how they'll do. I wonder how they'll deal with that.
Well, if there's enough public outcry, like any company, Time Warner will have to address it, especially considering that Comcast, which may win the record for one of the most reviled cable companies out there, lets people do this sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
RCN right. does.
Yep.
And Fios does it. Now, I would consider switching to Fios on that basis alone, but Fios is not available. It is available in my neighborhood. It is not available to my residence. It's about a block away. So I could see a house that's eligible to have Fios, but I myself cannot have it.
That's horrible. My folks are in Staten
Island. Yeah, I'm stuck.
Are in Staten Island.
I was going to say, I'm stuck. I live in it. Oh, go ahead, Pat.
My folks are in Staten Island, and they were with Time Warner for a long time. And they've recently offered Fios, and they switched to it, and they gave them a reduced rate, pretty much the same kind of channels. And the quality is good. I have to say, the amount of channels is probably is better than Time Warner as far as HD content. And I think the channel quality themselves is actually better than Time Warner.
Better infrastructure.
In other words, well, the picture quality, I don't think they compress it as much as what Time Warner does. So, and they're paying.
But I think it's also the infrastructure because they're newer. They don't have to deal with legacy infrastructure.
That's true. I'm sure that has something to do with it. And the other thing is, you know, they're locked in, you know, for 2 years at a lower rate. So they're happy.
Yeah, but that could change. When I agreed to switch all three of my services over to Time Warner, I had them with different companies. So the phone was being handled by Verizon. The internet was being handled by a third-party reseller through Verizon DSL, and then, which was rock solid, but they hadn't done a speed increase in 2 years. And then cable was being handled by Time Warner. I agreed to let Time Warner handle everything because they gave a discount. And I have a bill that says my discount is locked in for 42 months, except they deny that bill exists. The current promotional rate of $99 a month is scheduled to expire next month, at which point I will be faxing them a copy of that bill. And after my experience on Wednesday, I now have a direct number for a client relations representative.
So they know you really well, and they curse you every time you call up. They know it's you.
Let's put it this way. My relatives are convinced I'm going to get blacklisted by Time Warner Cable.
That might happen.
I've never heard of them doing it, though.
Anything's possible.
I hope it. I suppose so. I got blacklisted by Gateway back in the 90s. Or was it Dell? No, it was Dell who blacklisted me.
Unfortunately, I'm probably about to do the same with System 76, so.
Well, that's
for another time.
You still having issues with that, Dan?
Oh, no, the whole legal issue is over with, but now they won't replace the power supply on her netbook, so. I'll give a full rundown on Wednesday on the tech show.
But you're not wanted in any
states. And they won't contact me back either. So
the FBI is not knocking at your door, right?
No, not this time.
That's a plus.
I always wanted to be one of those people who, you know, fights the good fight for this sort of thing. You know, you hear about these people who go up against companies and, you know, just keep going at it because they know that it's the right thing to do in the long run, and that knuckling under just lets these companies win. I want to be one of those people, but I'm not really one of those people. I've fought a few battles, but I don't really like doing it. It just seems to make me upset and stressed, and I was really pissed off on Wednesday, and it ruined my entire day when the cable company didn't show up and didn't call, and didn't write, email, text.
What you got to do is you got to do some blog postings and badmouth them on Twitter.
Oh, I did tweet with them. That's how I got the client relations people to call me. I'd like to do a
shout
out to Howard.
Included the @TWC help or something like that, or
yeah,
what was their Twitter handle?
It's TWCABLE help. So it's not two C's. So it's one C.
Oh,
so it's you know, Time Warner Cable help, but there aren't two C's. So I was expressing it, and, you know, I was very excited. If you notice earlier, before this happened, I was excited about my wideband appointment. Then I was stressed about my wideband appointment. Then I was annoyed about my,
yeah.
You know, so everybody got to share in my emotions, you know, through the entire aggravation process. but now I have wideband.
And how do you like that?
Well, let's see. I've been uploading a lot of pictures. One of the projects that's been on my list is uploading decades worth of pictures to a third-party photo hosting site, so somebody might actually be able to see them.
Right, and also, like, it's a good archive, you know, backup, whatever.
Yeah, and this actually goes to something I was thinking about in regards to Myth TV, where I think that in some cases it's lagging in regards to recognizing how more and more things are stored remotely. So plugins like Myth Gallery, you know, have, because people aren't interested in updating them, have stayed where they are. And, you know, Myth Net Vision is good, but it hasn't quite gotten there either. And I don't know what's coming in 0.25 in terms of how they're going to improve that, but Myth Music is still not storage group enabled.
Yep. And then that needs a rewrite. That needs a front-end rewrite, Myth Music.
Yeah, and I think it's just, you know, a lot of people use it, but I think that the developers who are interested in really updating that are not there. They're interested in, you know, admittedly what they should be, which is the core functionality.
Right. The thing is, if you ever try XMBC and you look at their music player, and it's really nice. And you would hope someone would do the same thing for Myth TV with the music player.
Yeah. Well, I should check out XMBC.
I'm hoping at some point that it will start moving to some of these, you know, cloud-based media players. Like, I honestly have been moving everything to Google Music, but I know Guru, you've tried, you know, Google Music, you've tried Amazon's, you've tried, there was another one, Mubix or something like that.
They're a Brooklyn-based startup. I actually love them because they're OGG capable, but they aren't iterating nice the way I wanted. So I have my music in Google Music. I have part of my collection over at Amazon Cloud since I bought a lot of stuff there. And I also am keeping things on Muzone. So I have actually three different cloud service providers. And one
It would be nice at some point if somehow or another there become a, I don't know, like a, just a select a drop down and periodically add these to the list. So, okay, I have music stored here in Google Music or I have, you know, sign in with my Amazon credentials or whatever that may be. Now, granted, these things do need to have an API associated with them, and I'm pretty sure that they don't at this point to allow that other types of integration. But hopefully at some point that will come, and this would be a perfect opportunity to incorporate some of that right into the front end, you know, itself.
Well, I'm thinking of the Myth NetVision model that they put in, which also extends to things like Myth Weather, where they decided that they'd have a unified front end interface, and then they'd have, you know, the ability to have different back ends and scripts that would pull in content. And you could have that in the music category. But what about streaming music, which is let's take the Android Buffet podcast to do a little free ad. That's an Icecast server that comes up once a week. So what about Icecast content? A few years ago, I asked about, let's say, streaming video, which I know is on the feature list for the next release of Myth TV, where you could consider an HTTP live stream to be a recording source.
Now, that would be neat. That would be really, really neat. Yeah.
It would take away the
need for something like Miro and Miro Bridge, you know, to be, you know, consistently, you know, polling for something every 10 minutes or every hour, whatever you have it set to.
I don't like Miro
Bridge. And almost set it up like a schedule. What's that?
I wanted Myth NetVision to be the replacement for Miro Bridge by pulling the RSS feeds. So that wouldn't be live, but also I use the example of the Twit network, which has because they're a fairly open network, they have a stream that you can essentially use without flash. It's H.264 carried over HTTP. So I asked, well, why can't you just create that? It's broadcast 24 hours, set it as a tuner, link in their existing schedule of calendar events and schedule recordings.
Right, so it's basically,
you know,
people
would love that.
It's just a channel. It's just a channel that you can record off of, like anything else.
Yeah, and you know, those people over there are geeky enough that they probably go for it, whereas some other organizations probably wouldn't. But I'd like to bring in all of my content, and I'd like to find ways to make the interface work that way. Now, in the middle of the night, I would love it if Myth TV would go out and seek internet content. And I'm talking about legally downloadable internet content, including podcasts that record every week. And I understand that some things end up having to be Flash, a separate category. But once you accept that Myth TV could incorporate a podcatcher and set that as, let's say, a virtual channel, why not? Now, Miro Bridge does that, but why should one program be dependent on another graphical interface program?
Right.
When podcatching is inherently easy. It's not you parse a RSS script. There are plenty of libraries for that, and you find a file, you download the file, you put it into a directory, and add it to the database.
Right. Something maybe even with the Internet Archive where, you know, you got tons of stuff on there. It'd be great if they had like a feed with different categories and whatnot that you could pull in.
And then you end up getting a bit farther when you say, once you have this content, and this is the big word, curation, that you can go and get involved with people who want to, I'm not even talking about social, I'm talking about people who want to, who have content interests similar to yours, who will allow you to share in what they're interested in. So I'm not talking about, let's say, Get Glue, where it is, I like a program, you like a program, this is when we're watching it. But if there's a good piece of content out there, why can't you say, this person recommends my content, if they like it, I'm going to take it. Maybe I'll give it a shot. And that doesn't require any large-scale tweaking other than saying, have that person set up a feed and bring it in.
It's a good idea, you know.
And, you know, I hate to end up in the buzz area of social, but the thing that social is very good at, that is why people like Twitter and people like Google+, well, people other than me, for different reasons, is because they get articles and they get information from people whose opinion they actually care about.
Right. They're interested in what these people are saying.
Why is it that we can't get into creating channels that way? Now, I'm not talking about a literal channel, but saying, you know, I like a program, you like a program, I'm going to go watch that program, and make it easy to transition that you liking something that I might be interested in watching to sending it directly to the scheduler. So there's a third-party program that says, Pat likes something, Dan likes something, why don't you schedule a recording of it? And I wouldn't integrate that into the main functionality, but I would certainly integrate support for that kind of philosophy. Because I don't think social necessarily belongs in the core, but it's certainly a good third-party plugin.
Even
a third-party program.
Didn't Boxy try to incorporate some of the social aspects of things on the internet like that?
I'm really disappointed in Boxy. They've abandoned the group of people who actually cared about them to go and produce hardware that looks weird and admittedly not enough people are buying. And it's unfortunately buggy.
They announced that they're not going to produce another desktop version of Boxy. It's all going to be
inside
some type of box.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just a purely commercial thing.
And, you know, for somebody who went to the Boxy New York events, that's a bit disappointing because I had hopes for somebody who said, well, we're going to produce this version. We're going to produce it on multiple platforms. We want the community involved. We love community involvement. And then it's, oh, the community isn't good enough. We haven't found a way to make money off of the community. So we're going to focus on this box, which we haven't found a way to make money on either.
Yeah.
It just seems like, you know, they could have gone back and said, we realize that we're not making money off of this box. And we realize that the community has been supportive of us. Let's find a way to make money off of the community that has the community involved in development. There are plenty of great models like that.
Well, hopefully all those people go back to XBMC and push that along.
Oh, a lot of them are. A lot of them are. A lot of people went to Plex.
What's Plex? I'm not familiar with that one.
It's another one of those media type programs.
There's two parts to it. There's a server that'll do. I believe it handles on the fly transcoding. So if you need to, you know, put it down to another format or whatever. And then there's the clients, which run, I believe the server and the clients run, you know, Windows, Linux, Mac. They have Android clients. I believe there's a Google TV client, you know, for it. I imagine there's an Apple, you know, an iPhone client, iPad client, something like that. But I haven't had a chance to mess with it. I actually have another Google TV box now in the house as well, and I've been tempted to set one of them up just to see how it works and to stream, you know, some of the stuff right into it from the back end. Maybe even see if I can get it to run on my my QNAP box if that's available as one of the I forget what they're called, the ways you can plug in the software on that type of box. It's pretty neat. Pretty neat project. Mm-hmm.
And they
were called specific certain packages, some type of package they were called.
Well, I may be thinking of channels because I have a Roku box sitting here.
Mm-hmm. How's that working out for you still?
Well, the Roku box supplements with some things that I wouldn't be able to get through Myth TV. For example, I have a Prime membership, so I could watch Amazon Instant Video. And I tried Hulu Plus, but that just pissed me off.
It's not enough content on Hulu Plus and for what you got to pay, right?
Well, no, that's not what pisses me off. It pisses me off that basically things you can watch for free on their site or even in the Hulu desktop app, which they do still have for Linux, although I don't know how much they're updating it, you can't get that if content on your box if you pay them $8 a month. So I went in and, you know, I wanted to catch up on some television programs that my Myth TV box had. There was an error a few days last month where I missed a few episodes and it was holding up the line. So I have recordings of subsequent episodes, but there were some gaps. So I couldn't continue without losing the thread. So I'm just recording and waiting for reruns, which annoys me. So I went in and I said, fine, I'll give them $8 and I'll watch this on my nice big HD TV screen rather than using the Hulu desktop for Linux app, which Flash tends to not work so well on Linux because of no hardware acceleration.
Yeah, it's a CPU hog.
Yeah, so I had this problem where, you know, anything I watch on the regular Hulu desktop, you know, the action doesn't move along. It's good for if you want to watch a sitcom, but if you're trying to watch action, you get very annoyed very quickly. So I went in and it said, oh, this particular program is not available for this version due to our content providers. So the content providers have said that if you want to watch it for free on a computer, that's fine. But if you want to pay them $8 and watch it on your television, that's not fine.
So that is messed up logic.
So I went with a different thing. If an episode is holding up the line, so to speak, where I have 5 episodes recorded but there's 1 missing, I will pay the a la carte price on Amazon Video. I'll give them $2 just so I can continue on with the series and not be annoyed.
Amazon Video is very good.
And that works for me. I also have a Netflix subscription. I actually bought that because I thought my father would enjoy it. So I have I upgraded my Roku box and gave him the old one. But he keeps forgetting it in places. So his extra Roku box is here in New York. He's in Florida for the winter. So I considered canceling Netflix, but I'm heading down to Florida to see them for a long Christmas weekend. And I decided I'll just bring the Roku along. And if I can't talk my father into enjoying movies on the Roku box, then I'm canceling the Netflix subscription. Because I'll just stick with the Amazon Instant Video that I'm getting through the Prime membership.
Yeah, I get all that stuff through my Sony Blu-ray player, and it does Netflix. It's got Hulu Plus on there. It's got the
Don't forget Vudu.
I don't have Vudu.
No Vudu.
Not on the Sony. On the Panasonic, I think Vudu is on some of the other brands. But
I got it on the TV.
Right.
The LG.
Right, and you know, I could do a whole bunch of. There's a whole bunch of other web-enabled stuff in there. There's you could get YouTube through there. There's like a Sony channel that you can pull down the concerts listed. There's also streaming audio that, you know, I can listen to Pandora stuff, Slacker Radio. So the Blu-ray player does all that extra crap. And honestly, I only own one Blu-ray disc, interestingly enough. So I use the crap out of that thing for all that extra content, mostly Netflix and Amazon Prime. But, you know, and also the video rentals on Amazon. And the quality is good. I've had good experiences with the rentals on Amazon. Very good, I have to say. I've had zero issues.
Well, Well, I have a Samsung BD550, I think it is, sitting here, which also has Netflix, Vudu, Cinema Now, and I actually just turned it on tonight for the first time in a month or two. Now, every time there's an Amazon sale on Blu-rays, I end up buying these cheap Blu-rays of movies that I like, and they just sit here. I don't know why I keep doing this. I think I must be becoming a hoarder or something. But
make MKV, throw them on the MKV box.
Well, it's just I have to get back to watching movies because I'm sitting here with a stack of DVDs and Blu-rays that I've purchased on sales at Amazon. There's how they get you with that Prime membership. But yep. Basic, and you know, I'm sitting watching reruns of the Jack Benny Show. I'm off of Antenna TV, which is a broadcast substation of WPIX. So I am severely messed up in my television and movie watching right now. I don't know why I'm doing that.
Right.
But I should get back to it because I have the entire series of Dark Skies, which I really liked in the 90s.
Yeah, I liked that show too. That was a good show.
I bought it when it was on sale, and it's been sitting here, and I've been waiting to rewatch it. On top of it is the classic 1995 UPN series, Nowhere Man.
I vaguely remember that one.
Well, it was a show that went on, I think it was either after or immediately before Voyager when it was new.
Right. Yeah. I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, great premise. Guy sees something he shouldn't have, and they effectively erase his life.
Yeah.
And he's on a hunt to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, that was a decent show. I like that show.
Well, when you can get the entire run of a television series for $20, But this goes into another question I wanted to ask you guys, which is when I first started with Myth TV, I ended up archiving a lot of content that I recorded. So I, you know, have a box full of DVDs that I burned of, at the time it was XVID files. This was before, I changed what I encode at since then. But so I have boxes and boxes of stuff that are just sitting here doing nothing. And I've gotten to the point where I've just said, when I'm done with it, I'm going to just, unless it's something really rare and obscure, I'm going to just delete it.
Right. You see, I watch my TV shows that I watch regularly. I watch them and I delete them. Occasionally.
Me too.
Occasionally, I'll record a movie that I like or the kids like, and that'll stay on there. And, since I got a terabyte drive, it's not really an issue. I don't think I've been over the 50% mark on my hard drive. So,
I'm evolving in this direction. I don't know if that's why, because I've come to the conclusion that in the end, it's probably better for me if I really like something to purchase it rather than just leaving it there.
I agree. I agree with you.
Explaining to me that time shifting, at least in the legal fair use sense that was established by the Betamax decision, was that it was time shifting for the purpose of watching, not for acquiring a second copy of something. So I sort of get that. But I know certain people have spend a lot of time ripping things, extracting, and I've just decided I'm not going to derive enough benefit, and I probably should delete the last 2 years of burn notice off of my drive.
Yeah.
I'm not going to – I've gotten to the conclusion if I'm not going to watch it again. If I have a hankering for it, I'll go on and watch it on Amazon Prime or something.
Exactly. A lot of this stuff is available through streaming.
Well, that's what it's coming to, which is why you end up getting a streaming membership. It's for things your DVR is for things that are on television that you want to record, but if you want something from 2 years ago, maybe you do want to stream it, but then you get into the quality purists.
Yes, I totally see where you're going with this. There's a lot of the streaming stuff, the quality is not that great.
Well, now I have 30 megabits down. Maybe it'll be better.
Yeah, that should help.
But I'm not taking...
Yeah, I don't know if you got that letter or not, Pat, but RCN sent out a notice that they're increasing my bill by like $15 a month. But with that, they're also upping my speed. Anything below, I think it was 10 megabits down, is being bumped up to 15. And that's going to be the minimum that you could get is 15 megabit download. And I don't even know what the upload speed is. Yeah, another excuse for them to just send out a letter and say, hey, by the way, we're going to up your price. So...
Yep.
But speaking of dumping those archives there, what I've only ever, I mean, I occasionally will record something and somebody wants a copy of it, so I'll archive it to a DVD with Myth Archive. But my kids this year, we recorded a lot of like the Christmas shows and the holiday shows. You know your Charlie Brown.
I got a bunch of that Christmas stuff archived.
Right. So now, I guess I've never gone back and actually archived anything like that. What is the best way to go about doing an archive like that? Is it something right in there? Or I got to do an external program? I know you were using NUV export for a while there, Pat, but is that still considered to be the way to go?
I can't get it to work anymore. It's because they were trying to do a rewrite with the problem was that FFmpeg would keep changing its configuration, and it really drove everyone crazy.
Yeah.
So they would change the version numbers. They would change the commands. So now there's a special version of FFmpeg that's bundled with Myth TV, Myth FFmpeg.
Correct.
Which they've decided will be consistent and always work. So they rebased. Is it NUV or NUV? I never could figure out.
I think it's NUV. NUV export.
Okay, but they what they did was they started rewriting that to work on something that's inside Myth TV, so that it would in theory never fail. But that should hopefully work with 0.25.
That's what they're saying.
Because I've put in some of the art, I'm just suddenly, what are they using now for they used to use SVN. What are they using now? Git? What is the
repository?
Okay. I remember I pulled it down and I put it on my system and it's not quite there. There's still a few problems and I decided I wasn't really archiving anything right now anyway. And I decided that if it's coming off of broadcast television, I can just use, transcode it and then export to Myth Video and then just run something on it separately. My problem is the PVR 1212 recordings, which are still not transcodable in Myth TV, so I can't dump the commercials, which is pretty much why they've been piling up on my drive, which I decided recently I'm just going to dump them.
You know what?
I'm not doing anything with them.
I hate to bring this up to you because this is going to aggravate you, Gadget Guru, but I've been pushing the vast majority of my recordings to the HD Home Run Prime.
I know. It's not annoying. I said cry.
Having the triple tuner is really nice.
It is.
Well, I was at Micro Center buying the power supply, and they had an original HD Home Run for $47.
That's a great buy.
I was trying to decide if I wanted to dump the HD 5500 that I used to record broadcast and have a second Silicon Dust Home Run doing local broadcast stations.
Right.
And just essentially...
Well, I have one here for you if you want it, because mine is just sitting here. I'm looking at it right now, and so I'm not doing anything with it. So if you want it,
Okay, well, we'll discuss... I would take it and just eliminate all the cards so everything would run over the network, and I have enough network
bandwidth. You could actually do up to four, two physical and two virtual tuners on that as well. So you can theoretically do up to four things with that at one time.
Yeah, well, the virtual tuners wouldn't really work very well for broadcast. It does work well if
if
your cable company has two stations that you actually want to watch in clear. But if you're trying to get, I have the network channels first go to the broadcast because usually they have a higher bitrate, and it's been surprisingly reliable. I actually got the cable company to replace my broadcast antenna wire. They didn't realize what it was, and I gave the guy a few dollars for tip. Well, those guys can actually, if whatever you can complain about them, they know how to make cable. That's what they do all day.
Yeah, they're very good with cable connections, those guys. Give them that much.
So, they can put an ending on a cable much better than I can. I said, well, would you just, cut the end off this cable and give me a nice connector under the table? Worked out nicely.
Awesome.
But basically everything's reliable here. But I may take you up on that if you're not using it. Would you, let's see, am I going to be seeing you in March? Or if not,
possibly. I think I'm definitely on board for going. I might actually be giving a talk there too.
I'm debating. Are you talking about the Northeast Linux Fest?
Yeah, Northeast GNU Linux Fest.
I might be doing that maybe.
Well, I just
I'm working.
I scheduled my vacation for that week. I figured afterwards I'll go somewhere.
There you go. No, but I'm working with those guys to get the get open schedule up and running for them, and I figured, well, I'll just you know, give them my time to, you know, to manage all that for them, so if they need changes or anything like that. And you know, Jonathan had mentioned that there's one slot left open that they were kind of seeing, you know, if somebody was going to take it, and if not, then I'm gonna jump in there and take it. I've been working on a presentation and a subsequent Hacker Public Radio series and, you know, stuff like that. So
you go, Dan.
Well,
you
I'd
go.
Talk yeah, about something.
Pretty good.
I'd talk yeah. about something, but I have absolutely no idea what I'd talk about that people would want to listen to. You know, I know I like to think I'm an interesting person, but I couldn't think of what I would do in a panel. I've never been.
Well, I'm not sure if anybody wants to listen to me or not, but it's something that I've been putting together, and I got one HPR episode ready to go. It's just I just need to upload it, but I've been waiting till I have like a lot of. I actually have to write some code to, you know, put it, make it available in a Git repository so people can download it and do whatever they want with it. But once that's available, then I will I'll push out the first episode and get working on the second episode to kind of go with it. There should be about four of them in all. So.
Well, how about this? I'll sit in the front row if you give a talk.
There we go. And considering there's only one track, I'm hoping that there would be enough people, you know, still attending. So.
Awesome. Well, the only thing I skipped last time was the talk on Debian package creation.
Mm-hmm.
I did sit. Jared Wilson was there last year.
Yep.
And he wrote the document that started a lot of people, including myself.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we've talked about that numerous yep. times on here. Yep.
And, you know, I wanted
how we all got into it.
Yep.
Yep.
I wanted to sit there and, you know, show my support for somebody who had helped me out over the years. And I restrained myself from correcting him a few times, but.
Awesome.
Well, you know, I when I research something, I tend to get very specific on detail. So there were a few things, but, it worked out, and I volunteered this year to be the pre-con entertainment director. I was disappointed last year when nothing happened the night before, since a lot of people came up and spent the night. So I said that I would organize some sort of get-together that would not cost any money.
Oh, that's nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's a hotel. You know, there has to be a restaurant somewhere that will accommodate a table of whoever shows up. It's just a matter of figuring out where everybody should meet and getting a table.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like we're going to have some more things to talk about in the near future. You know, I'm waiting for my new motherboard to come in the next couple of days, so I'm sure yeah. we'll have an episode a lot sooner than later. And Gadget, you know, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it. You know, thanks for sharing with us.
I love talking about this stuff. So, any excuse I have to talk about technology where the other people actually know what I'm talking about.
Well, we'll have to have you get on again to tell us about your exploits.
And now I have to talk to Dan about where he can ship his HD home run.
Yep.
All righty then.
I'll send you something for that if you want to ship it to me. We'll work something out. Maybe a trade. I'll have to find something here that you want. I can get you a good deal on a Nook Touch. No.
I'd have to see. Right now I have enough tablets and phones and stuff like that, but we'll work something out. Not a problem.
Okay, well.
Cool.
Yes.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening.
Do I get to plug my other program?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes,
Guru.
Definitely.
Okay, well.
And for one, I'd like to say it's probably been about 2 years since you've been on last, I think, there, Guru.
It's been a while.
At least been.
I think
been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And I'm always happy to stop by and chat.
Yep, it's good to hear. Good to hear from you again. And we're glad we're both Pat and I are both really excited about the Android Buffet podcast.
Yep,
so go ahead
show.
And throw that out there.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited that over the last few months we were able to set up an Icecast server. So every Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard, you can tune in at androidbuffet.com/live. And join us. There's a chat room where my computer is lurking 24 hours a day, except on weekends where it occasionally stops. But I'm lurking there a large percentage of the time. There are a few other people who leave that chat on, and it's getting very jumpy on Monday nights.
Cool.
We have a nice core following of people who show up for the live show, and other people show up for the download. You can download the show. We have both an OGG and an MP3 version. I do that for the freedom loving and the freedom hating people.
Mm-hmm.
Want to be fair. And we talk about Android. We try to focus on apps, but we also have random conversations that have nothing to do with Android that seem to entertain people.
There you go.
We did try to spin that off into its own podcast, the Flying Bathtubs podcast, but we are just too random to actually keep it up. So it's the only podcast I know of that's on less frequently than, let's say, the Myth TV cast has been lately.
I don't feel so bad.
Okay. Well, I thought that would make you feel better. But if you'd like to tune in, you could find us. We also announce new shows at Android Buffet on Twitter. You could find me at Gadget Wisdom on Twitter, on Identica or status.net, depending on your preference. And there's now a Gadget Wisdom Facebook fan page for some particular reason. So if you want to be a fan of me, they don't care who I am. So you can like me.
Excellent.
So far, no one really has. But if you'd like to like me, I want to be liked.
I'll go do it right now.
Well, I'm told that this is an important thing. If you're running a website or a podcast, you now have to have a Facebook page, a Twitter account. It's just really stressful to run a site nowadays. You have to have all these methods of telling people about yourself. It's not enough just to write interesting content.
Nope. You've got to make yourself available.
Yes, but if you guys are interested, there's always a space at the Android Buffet table. Dan, you've been one of my most favorite guests on the show. We haven't had that many. Well, tomorrow night we have another guest.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. We've also had a Blu-ray reviewer who happens to be an HD purist on, who also reviews video games. So we got to ask some questions about that. That was a few weeks ago. He does the Scene in HD podcast over on the Digital Media Zone, which I've sourced a lot of content from over the years and a lot of talent.
Cool. Good stuff.
That's where I stole my co-host from.
Good stuff. He was on the HTTP Centric podcast.
Yeah, that's how I stole him.
Yep.
That podcast went under, and I took advantage and took him away.
Well, there's somebody we got to get on Myth TV, because Sage TV, he's not too happy that it itself got bought. So we need to get him on the Myth TV. So.
All these Windows-based DVR systems are going bye-bye.
Yep.
Well, it's sad, but if you want to come and talk him into it, we could stage an intervention.
We might have to.
We could try.
drag him to some hotel in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, well, I'll fly to Jacksonville if you guys want to stage an intervention.
All right. Sounds like a deal then. We'll formulate a plan then. All right.
Okay.
All right.
We should also give a shout out to Murph in the Android Buffet IRC. He's a part of our local lug here, and not that I've been around lately or not. And I don't know about you, Pat, or whatever.
Not really.
But Murph.
Not lately.
Murph. So they're always talking about Murph in the IRC on the Android Buffet. So.
Good. Well, yes, and he was the first person that I met at the Northeast GNU Linux Fest. He was the only person I found at the hotel the night before.
Shout out to Murph.
No, he's a good guy.
Yep.
He's
good guy. All righty. Well, guys.
And you guys are welcome to show up anytime.
Well, I might have to take you up on that.
Okay. You know where to find me.
Yep. Thanks again for coming on, guys. We'll keep it real. And we'll talk to you real soon. Take care. Bye.
Later.